con solo deliberación para gusto llegó.
Welcome back to KPFK 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Again, this is Tammy Bang Liu and Eric Mann. Getting back to our conversation on the presidential election in El Salvador, joining us right now is Esther Portillo, community organizer from San Bernardino and an activist with the FMLN in Los Angeles. Esther, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome, Esther.
Hi. Hi. How's everybody over there?
pretty good. You know, Cynthia and Manuel just started off the show trying to give us, providing the context for what's going on down, what went on in El Salvador, and trying to give us a feel for the FMLN's kind of organizing tactics. What were they trying to do? Mm-hmm. So I thought we maybe try to switch gears a little, since you have been playing a real active role in trying to combat the Arena government and the U.S. tactics down there. Could you talk a little bit about what were some of the tactics the Arena government and party used, and what did the FMLN do to counter it, and then what role you played?
Sure. Basically, there are basically scare tactics that were forced on the population in terms of by way of commercials, radio spots, and just, you know, dropping leaflets massively on the population, telling them that they were going to deport Salvadorans from the United States back to El Salvador, saying that they were going to not let them, the Salvadoran people from the United States send remittances. Basically just scaring the population on a daily basis, every hour. The Tony Saca campaign, which is ARENA, which is the Alianza Republicana in El Salvador, they used over $55 million to do this campaign and basically scare the population. And they also used a lot of anti-communist propaganda that, you know, put the FMLN in a really negative light and brought back a lot of memories of the war and of the it was like a psychological, you know, campaña de miedo, which is what we call it, you know, a campaign of fear, of terror.
So what were some of the go ahead, Esther.
And basically the FMLN, they did this one-on-one, door-to-door contact with the population. As we know, the FMLN is the People's Party, and they do not have that, you know, much money. And so, and not only did they use the one-on-one contact, but the FMLN knows that organizing and grassroots going door-to-door was going to be a more effective tool to get to the population. In terms of what I have done since I've gotten here, it was going on community radio stations in El Salvador, organizing press conferences, denouncing the 9 Republicans from the United States government, stating that they were going to propose some type of a legislation to freeze the remittances, which, you know, it was just a bunch of talk. It wasn't anything legitimate. And also letting the radio stations, the press here, know that the 28 Congress people from the United States, all Democrats, you know, were saying that the U.S. was going to be neutral, that, you know, whichever party won, they were not going to change relations with them. And we had about 4 press conferences. We met with the embassy, the United States embassy. 2 days after we met with the embassy, they made a statement stating that U.S. relations with El Salvador would not change if the FMLN would win. So that, you know, meeting with them did work. However, the next day, the front page said Congress will freeze the remittances, is threatening to freeze the remittances. And so, you know, which they define Congress as these 9 Republicans from the United States. And so it's just been going, I mean, it was like constant commercials over and over. I thought I didn't have their own, you know, channel here, because it was like constantly, you know, on the radio and on the TV with these commercials, you know, and depicting how it's going to be if people lost their remittances, their lifeline. So
if I understand correctly, the Arena government owns most of the media, 95% of the print, 80% of the TV, and 70% of the radio. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And we also met with the press, with the Prensa Gráfica, and we also met with El Diario de Hoy, which are the two main print media here, because we were disgusted with what we were reading every morning. Congressman Javier Becerra did a press conference, a teleconference from the United States here in, to the United, here in El Salvador, made a phone call, and we had a press conference, and they didn't publish a single word that he said. They didn't publish anything of what he said in regards to the 28 Congress people that had said that the U.S. was going to be remain neutral, and they didn't publish anything at all whatsoever. And we had this meeting with the with both of these press news media, and they basically justified printing all this because they were they did not want that FMLN to win. And they told us that point blank. And you know, they owned the media. But we countered and said, you know what, you know, you cannot lie to the population. You're directly lying about the remittances and about the deportations, and you're utilizing Salvadorans like myself, Salvadoran Americans, Salvadorans all, you know, in the United States as a way to scare people and lying to them.
Well, we know on a very minor level, the Strategy Center Bus Riders Union is having a tremendous struggle with the Los Angeles Times, where one of their key reporters, Kurt Streeter, just chooses not to cover us. We won a, it's a tiny thing, but we won a 14-0 vote at the L.A. City Council of opposing their appeal, and they just choose not to cover it. So the dilemma for all social movements is, if the bourgeois press is the bourgeois press, you know, I mean, you're telling them that they are lying, and they're saying, yes, we are, you know. You're telling them that they're partisan in the election, and they're saying, yes, we are. So that's one of the dilemmas. Does the FMLN have their own newspaper?
Yes, they do have their own newspaper, but it's not as much circulated. And there's a newspaper, which is Core Latino, which is a progressive news media. And they, during the war, they were actually bombed on, and they have been very receptive. Obviously, they have had, you know, they've personally interviewed me. They've interviewed FMLN people. They were actually there yesterday at the rally where Shafiq spoke at about 10 o'clock last night. And but unfortunately, they don't have a high circulation compared to the Prensa Gráfica and Diario de Hoy. And the spot, just to put a commercial on TV, cost over $5,000 just, you know, to put it there. And Arena not only had, they were doing it, but this other organization called Fundación Libertad was airing commercial after commercial after commercial. So it was not only Arena, but this, and I mean, they're funded by Arena too, but this other foundation that, right-wing foundation that just constantly bombarded the people with these scare tactics, and, you know, they were somewhat successful, you know, in doing that. It's, you know, basically their lifeline, the remittances are the lifeline of many people, most people here. So when you play psychological games on that, the people are, you know, scared. And I just want to mention, last night after the elections, we saw 15 military people dressed in their military clothing, armed, and they were outside. They were about maybe a block away from where I'm personally staying in Soyabango. And other international observers also were able to observe the military in urban areas of San Salvador. And so that was something that really, you know, struck us, because we hadn't seen no military. I've been here the last 5 years, you know, and I haven't seen such a thing. And I saw that last night, maybe 2 hours after the polls closed.
Thanks so much, Esther. That was great. Manuel and Cynthia, you still on the line too?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Great. Well, let me throw a couple of thoughts out, and maybe we could spend, and the three of you, you know, the energy that you bring to this. I mean, obviously, having U.S. observers there and people from not just U.S. observers, but from the Latino community in L.A. is still an important factor, positive. Let me just throw out a couple of thoughts I have on, you know, sort of, a general analysis that requires a great deal of specificity and some questions that would come out of that. I mean, the first thing I think is it's not just to put a good face on everything and say, you know, I hate when the left turns every defeat into a victory, but I think that there really are some very positive things that I can see from afar about this. I mean, the first thing is that for a guerrilla movement to try to transform itself into an electoral party is very, very difficult. And revolutions are best done by revolutionaries, and elections are best done by bourgeois parties. It's very difficult to transform a guerrilla movement into an electoral party and into a united front. And the first thing is it sounds like they've been able to do that. The second thing is that I think that the myth of free elections, you know, which is what Esther and the two of you have said, is many people generally vote to their right. They don't vote to their left. So, for instance, people, it's been a very frequent thing that the left is seen to be ahead of the elections, and then right before the vote, the electorate moves to the right by 7, 8, or 10%. So that's not the first time this has happened. People wish the left was in power, but in the end, they're very afraid of the very real retaliation. The third is that there's sometimes when the left is essentially people's first choice, but they're not ready to move because is this an election or this is a revolution? And in some ways, even though it's an election, it's going to require a revolution. So there's a very good quote, for instance, in the New York Times today, in a very pretty sympathetic, actually, article, I think, to the FMLN by a Tim Weiner, who ends the quote with saying, Vilma Romero, 42, a doctor in San Salvador, the capital, chose Mr. Saca tonight without enthusiasm. Quote, I'll stick with the devil I know, she said. We're giving them another chance. This should be a big lesson for the right. They have to draw the conclusion that there are a lot of things that need to be fixed, and if they don't fix them, this will be their last chance. Now, I don't necessarily think it will be their last chance, but the point is that now the FMLN is positioned as the serious opposition. I think it's very important that they were able to defeat the splinter guy that left the FMLN and tried to run as a third-party candidate. I saw he only got 4% of the vote. That was a major victory to expose, you know, that he didn't take 15% of the vote. And also, I think they have 4 more years now to figure out how to build their movement in the street, how to increase their fundraising. I mean, because these have to be solved, right? How to get a newspaper that can reach more people, how to develop a movement to either challenge the bourgeois media into, quote, more fairness, which I've never seen work, or to develop more of their own media, how to develop more campaigns, like on the healthcare campaign, and how to even defend their alliance with the Axis of Good, because you can't be a red and then get mad that you're red-baited. You can't be a leftist and then get mad that you're left-baited. You can't be for Fidel and then get mad when they say you're with Fidel. So some of these things, I think there's a time, like in Spain, when the electorate says, we get it, we're ready to make a move. And that's like when quantitative turns into qualitative. And as somebody who's learned most of it through Cynthia and Manuel, you know, who have taught me in the last 3 or 4 months, and who was fortunate enough to listen to Shafiq Khandal at a fundraiser here, and I think that they've made major breakthroughs in having many of the pieces of the United Front in place. So they have also splits in the ruling class, and I think this is, you know, I mean, and I think this will be a bitter sum up in some way, but I think they have many, many positives to use to sort of bring to bear on what they did, maybe they didn't do right, or what they would self-criticize and learn from. What do the three of you think of this instant analysis? And please take on the co-host as vigorously as possible.
Well, you know, I think that, I mean, on all the pieces that you said were positive. One, yes, you know, the FMLN went from being a guerrilla movement to a political party was a major structural issue that they had to go through. I mean, if we look at the origins of the FMLN, it was the alliance of essentially 5 different left organizations. all of them was their distinct political points of view. I mean, you had Shafiq Handel and the Communist Party, who had historically aligned with the Soviet Union and essentially a peaceful road to socialism, and who in many ways also flirted with the focal theory of Che Guevara and sort of the models of the Cuban Revolution. You had, you know, Trotskyites, you had Maoists, you had different left formations, you had a big, huge thrust of, you know, sort of liberation theologists and sort of the work that they did in the field. So it was a major, you know, sort of internal struggle that the Frente had gone, I would say, essentially for almost 10 years until they were able to become sort of a solid left organization where essentially where you did have a victory among forces inside the sort of tendency inside Chafik's realm. And so I think it's a huge victory that they ran on a very left platform. In other words, even though there was some major splits in the ruling class, they were still essentially able to run a left program that not wasn't radical, but in the sense that people felt it. You know, in other words, when they said, yeah, we're going to try to find a solution on how to reduce your light bill, your phone bill, take away the basic taxes away from basic foodstuff, try to reintegrate the colon because you only can buy five colones for each dollar, was something that spoke to many folks, and that I think even among the middle class, because the middle class also feels the pinch. You know, you have like my uncle, Jose Valiente, you know, he's a teacher. He works three jobs. He lives a very moderate life, you know, and just to keep this sort of moderate and simple home that he has to work three jobs, but has a huge light bill. He has a huge phone bill. All of them sort of are tied to the promises for lower fares when they privatized all the state assets that they had in the country. And so I think that in many ways there was a good faith. But I think the last thing is that even though, you know, the elections, we can consider them to be fair, the level of intimidation was not only on the ideological level, but even on the level of, you know, of telling people that they would get fired the next day of the FMLN won, you know, or stories in the maquilas that their DUIs, which is sort of their identification cards, were withheld to them and essentially threatened, if the FMLN wins tomorrow, you will lose your job. And in many of the sort of larger industries here in the country, most of them weren't even allowed to go and vote for yesterday. And so I think that, I think, yes, there's a lot of lessons here and an advancement, because, in fact, in the last two elections, I mean, the FMLN in the last elections for the delegados, or sort of like the, I would best denote it, to the National Congress, won, you know, over, I would say, am I correct on this one, 50,000, I think it was, maybe I'm exact, 500,000 votes in the last election. 40,000. That was a significant win for the FMLN in this last election compared to 99 for the presidential. Their percentage of the vote was also higher. But again, to a certain degree, in the last couple of days, or even yesterday for us, was completely shocking, you know, because you saw a stadium filled with red T-shirts. You know, the left is a mass question here, and yet, you know, that sort of 20% that just overwhelmingly went to Arena, it's just a big shocker for us.
We're going to go to break, Cynthia, and we're going to go to both of you back in a minute. Okay, just hang on with us here.
Okay.
So you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Stay tuned for Beneath the Surface at 5 p.m. with host Susie Wiseman. Susie will be covering the recent Russian election with Stephen Cohen, who just returned from Moscow, and then also radical Israeli professor Yuval Palid, who will talk about the explosive situation in Israel and Palestine following the killing of the Hamas leader, Yasin. And finally, Susie will have a dialogue with renowned socialist scholar Leo Panitch on the state of the U.S. imperialism over the year after the invasion of Iraq.
Hi, everybody. We're still back. This is Eric and Tammy, Eric Mann and Tammy Liu on Voices from the Frontline at 4 o'clock. Why don't you keep going in terms of any observations you have about the election and maybe what you're thinking about what we can do in the United States. I mean, one of the things that it must make us think is not just what the FMLN should do for the next 4 years, but what should we do?
And then also adding with that, you know, we understand that the FMLN holds 31 out of the 84 parliamentary seats. So in addition, not just to be stuck over the next 4 years and kind of parliamentary maneuvers, what's the FMLN, I know it's in the early stages, but what are they trying to do in terms of trying to consolidate the gains and its ability to move hundreds and thousands of people and the networks that one builds over a huge campaign of this nature? And how are they going to use this as a force to start pushing the NA government and making their move in other fields?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Cynthia. So I think just to, you know, continue where Manuel was going, I think just to name that this was still an incredibly historic election. You had over 63% of the populace that was registered to vote come out to vote. And if we compare that again to U.S. turnout, I mean, that's just an amazingly high number. And the reason being, I think, it's because the debate was so was reinvigorated, first of all, and it was a very important and clear debate, not just between two electoral parties, as we've been talking about, but clearly a difference between the right and the left. And as Manuel was saying, this is keeping a left pole in the political debate of a nation's future very much alive. And those 31 of 84 assembly people in El Salvador that are of the FMLN party is no small thing, because again, it shows, even if it's not at the level of the Arena government, it is still a significant amount of FMLN left-wing party members in power. And that has been one of the things that Shafiq and other party officials post the elections have named as one of their main areas to fight for every point of the program that they were going to fight for through the presidency. And then just to say, well, what does this make us think about going back to Los Angeles is, of course, the still very clear and prominent role that the United States government continues to play within the political systems of sovereign nations. And particularly with the Bush administration, the right wing is emboldened like nothing else, because all of these Republicans that were putting out these statements were from the right wing, and it gives, of course, even that much more power to what they're saying when right after a quote from Otto Reich, for instance, you have, you know, comma, of the Bush administration, you know, i.e., son of father who continued the Civil War, i.e. son who may continue to be president after the 2004 elections. And so Manuel and I are already talking about, you know, of course the Strategy Center is talking about, and other progressive forces are talking about the importance of the defeat of the Bush administration and the importance of it being not just for, of course, not just for the domestic realm, but even more so in some ways for the international implications it has for elections such as these, but on many other levels for the sovereignty of other nations. So that's what we started to talk about. And, you know, again, just kind of reiterate for us as organizers in Los Angeles based in the United States, the importance of the elections in the United States this coming November.
Well,
can I answer that?
Please, Esther, is that you?
Yes.
Yeah, please jump in.
The FMLA in Los Angeles, we're going, as Shafiq said yesterday, we will continue to work to educate the Salvadoran community and other Central American communities and other groups of people in LA, including our Congress people, about the dangers of CASTA on some level, as the FMLN will continue to do, and we're going to continue to fight against the privatizations that we know are coming due to the election of Tony Saca, the new right wing president of El Salvador, right now the FMLN is also going to push for to give us the right to vote, Salvadorans to vote in the United States, and we're also going to push that. There was an article in the Washington Post, I believe last Thursday, that basically put out the campaign of the FMLN Washington, D.C. The City Council of Washington, D.C. named February 2nd Dia de Shafiq, the Day of Shafiq. And, we know that most Salvadorans in Los Angeles and D.C. are sympathetic to the FMLN. We're guerrilla fighters. We're organizers in El Salvador in the 80s, and up to recently. And so we know that we need to continue to organize and to build our base in Los Angeles to be a force into here in El Salvador, because we are the ones that sustain that economy. And that's one thing that we know, that the right here here in El Salvador have realized in the past 2 weeks, because the Salvadoran Americans that have come from L.A. have all denounced the campaign. And that was one thing that really stood out for me, that there was no real U.S. supporters, like Salvadorans who were from the U.S. supporting Arena here. It was very – I didn't see anything, actually. And so I think they do fear that, that we are this force, we have the economic power that sustains this country. And so we're going to continue to denounce, these privatizations that we know are going to be coming, and CAFTA and so on.
So CAFTA meaning the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which is
right.
The taking NAFTA and expanding it to El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Honduras, and Costa Rica?
And,
exactly.
I think one of the things that's very interesting is that in Los Angeles, we've had tremendous struggles with the Democratic Party. In the United States, anybody on the left should understand that the Democratic Party is generally not an anti-imperialist party. It's a pro-imperialist party. All those things, depending on your audience, if this was a more conservative audience, I would focus on what's wrong with the Democratic Party as if they didn't understand it. But for those of us who came to the left by hating the Democratic Party, because it was the Democrats' war in Vietnam, it was Bill Clinton's ending welfare as we know it, there's a growing, not a growing, but there's a tendency on the left that wants to equate the Democrats with the Republicans, or equate Kerry with Bush. And I think that it's very frankly, I've been reading a lot of the stuff, focused a lot on the white email crowd, because here we had Ed Reyes and Javier Becerra, who we've had some unities with and some struggles with in Los Angeles, but coming down and trying to defend self-determination for the Salvadorian people. And then we've had Roger Noriega and Otto Reich, I'm sorry, but it sounds like the Third Reich, going down and literally threatening to assassinate, the government if it wins. It's hard for people to not understand that that's a significant difference alone, not so much for the election of Kerry, which is what we need, but for the defeat of George Bush. So I think that those of us who are more, I would say, third worldist, and I mean third worldist inside and outside the United States, can hate the Democratic Party, but not be confused about the enormous historical stakes, as Cynthia was saying, of defeating George Bush. And I think it must be, you know, Cynthia, when you go down in El Salvador, if you thought you were right in L.A., it must seem like a more strong understanding when you're down in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that, you know, we were seeing over and over again, the influence of the United States still incredibly strong. I mean, it's very difficult, as Esther was saying earlier, to erase the trauma of almost two decades of a civil war where so many people lost their lives, and directly involved in that and orchestrating that was the United States government. And, you know, of course, under Reagan and the Bush administrations. And so here we go again. And, you know, when you see these ads, I mean, there is one thing to say, oh, you know, we're not surprised that they did this and this and this. But the level at which they feel that they can attack the left, which, of course, you cannot, they will always do that. But the level of what Esther was saying, the psychological trauma, like tapping into that. And of course, you know, if you have, when you look at the newspapers and you see, you know, when they refer to Bush, to Bush Senior, they put Bush parentheses padre. And who's in power now? Bush parentheses son. You know, it's not that much different, right. You know, and this is what they're tapping into. And it's not just a psychological thing, but clearly, as we know, it's tied to a very real material, military, economic, political threat. That's what they advertised. And that's what was essentially one of the key factors to Arena's 57% vote.
Well, Esther, you're going to be coming back to the United States, is that right?
Yes, I am.
And working in L.A. with CSPES, is that correct? Or with is it?
I've been with FML Los Angeles, but I also work with CSPES.
Okay, so how can people reach you? This is excellent reporting. If people want to get involved with FMLN Los Angeles, CSPES, or to reach you personally, how can we do that?
Yes, definitely. Actually, I don't have the FMLN LA phone number on me, but I will give out another number, and that's 909-754-4880, and the email is venceremos77@aol.com.
Sounds great. And Manuel, Cynthia, just real quick, how they can reach you, and then we're going to do our credits and get out of here.
They can call us 213.
The number there is 213-387-2800. And our website is www.thestrategycenter.org.
Seems very far away, huh?
Huh?
Seems very far away now.
Yes, and www.busridersunion.org, which has a report that Cynthia and I wrote about our first impressions, and we're about to send another one later on tonight about post-election sort of reflections.
All right, so thanks for joining us this week. I'd like to thank again Manuel Criollo, Cynthia Rojas, and Esther Portillo. Today we had music from Adrian Guizueta, Gil Scott-Heron, and Omaya. Please let us know what you think about the show. You can call us at 213-387-2800. Big ups to our producer, Alan Minsky, and our engineer, Steve Martin. This is Tammy Bang-Lu and Eric Mann signing out. We'll see you next week.